Well, it's another Sunday. We're back in church, and here we are to know and experience the love of God. So, what better way for me to start my sermon than to share some insults with you? These aren't just any insults, however. These bon mots flowed off the tongue of the great Winston Churchill. And so, speaking of his parliamentary colleague, Stafford Cripps, he said, "There but for the grace of God goes God." Of his wartime deputy, Clement Attlee, who succeeded him as prime minister, he said, and this seems especially appropriate on this Good Shepherd Sunday, "A sheep in sheep's clothing." There is the famous exchange between Churchill and Lady Nancy Astor. Lady Astor supposedly said, "Winston, if you were my husband, I would put poison in your tea." To which Churchill replied, "Nancy, if I were your husband, I would drink it." But Churchill did also have, in addition to his barbed tongue, a high degree of self-awareness, and so he could poke fun at himself. And in 1954, at a news conference in Washington, D.C., he said, "I am prepared to meet my maker. Whether my maker is prepared for the great ordeal of meeting me is another matter." Words. Words that can make us laugh, words that can make us think. Winston Churchill is arguably the greatest and most consequential figure of the 20th century, and that was because of his facility with language. Through newspaper columns and radio broadcasts and speeches in the House of Commons during the 1930s, he raised awareness of the looming menace of the Nazis. And it was in the spring of 1940 when Britain stood alone, and the cabinet was faced with the monumental decision of whether to prosecute the war or to seek an accommodation with Germany, that Churchill prevailed through the force of argument. Had Churchill not won the day in that argument, had Britain sued for peace with Hitler, the world we live in today would look very, very different. There would have been no Western Front. The Germans most likely would have defeated the Russians. Europe would have fallen under the tyranny of the Nazis, most likely not to emerge. Our country would have been affected, as would have the rest of the world. Words made a difference. Words shaped the world. Indeed, our own faith has long claimed that. Remember how John's gospel begins. "In the beginning, there was the Word, and the Word was made flesh." Words and language are fundamental to who we are and to how we experience life. And they are a critical part of how we experience God. Today is Good Shepherd Sunday. We heard the lesson from John, in which Jesus offered his observations about his role, and we read together the words of the 23rd Psalm. I looked through my notes. The last time I preached on the 23rd Psalm was back in 2005, up in Maine. I gave a perfectly serviceable sermon that day, but it's not one that I would nominate for an inclusion in the anthology of my greatest pulpit hits. I was able to derive some comfort, though, as I was preparing today's message and I was reading through commentaries and books I have, and scholars and preachers and pastors for whom I have great respect all seem to come up short. It was a puzzle, a conundrum. How was it that this beloved text that resonates with so many of us, it's one of the few parts of Scripture that people can recite, maybe not the whole thing, but they know phrases, seems so resistant to lively interpretation and commentary? I found an answer, finally, thanks to Rabbi Harold Kushner. Now, many of you may recognize that name. He was the author of the 1981 bestseller, When Bad Things Happen to Good People. Rabbi Kushner's book grew out of the painful experience that he and his wife had when they lost their 14-year-old son to progeria. And he talks about that experience again in this short book, The Lord is My Shepherd, Healing Wisdom of the 23rd Psalm. And as he talks about this, he makes reference to the great 20th century Jewish theologian Martin Buber. And Buber noted that there are two ways that people interact with God. We do it through theology, when we talk of God, and we can do it through religion, when we experience God. And what I found as I was looking through a lot of those texts, and I look back on my old sermon, there's a lot of theology going on there. But the 23rd Psalm is about experience. It's about a lived moment. And in this book, Kushner guides the reader phrase by phrase, opening doors, leading people into a new experience of the text. These words ring true for us. We know there are moments that are filled with joy. There are moments that are filled with pain. There's a reason that this psalm is read at funerals in both the Jewish and Christian traditions. The psalmist offers words of consolation and comfort and support and hope. Yes, this is all true. But these words draw us into a place of familiarity and comfort, a place that we need to be when our lives are turned upside down through the loss of a loved one or through a crisis. When we read these words, we're in the presence of a friend. It will not surprise you to hear that nobody has ever called me up and said, "Steve, when you're putting together the funeral service, would you please use the translation from the New Revised Standard Version of the Bible?" If you open your pew Bibles, and this is the NRSV, to page 553, you'll see the 23rd Psalm. But you'll read it, and the odds are you're going to think, "That's wrong. Where are the cadences? Where are the words? Where are the phrases I know?" Don't feel bad if you reach that conclusion. My beloved and esteemed advisor in graduate and divinity school, Paul Hansen, was on the team that worked on the NRSV, and Paul confessed that they got it wrong when they came to the 23rd Psalm. This translation is scholarly and technically correct. And indeed, when you look at verse 4, and you hear the words here, "Even though I walk through the darkest valley," you are reading a translation that is technically correct. But you'll notice there is a very small M. That is an asterisk, leading you down to the bottom. And it says, or the valley of the shadow of death, the phrase we know. Now, if you look at the Hebrew, it could either be one word or two. If you read it as one word, Tzalmavet, then it means the darkest place, the deep darkness. But if you read it as two words, Tzalmot, then you've got the shadow of death. There's something wonderful about this ambiguity. And it's in moments of ambiguity in our lives that we most need God. The reason Paul said they got it wrong wasn't because they'd made an error of translation. But the translators focused on the fact of the psalm as opposed to the truth. It's in the valley of the shadow of death that we encounter our deepest fears, our most devastating losses. We are all haunted by death in one form or another. If it's not our own potential demise, and I should strike the word potential because it will happen, then it's that of a loved one, a family member, or a friend. In those moments, the psalmist tells us, God promises us we are not alone. God is with us. The pain cannot be made to magically go away. We don't live in a world of magic. And we do not have a faith that is rooted in fairy tales. Instead, we have a faith that lifts up a God who is steadfast, who is loyal, who is committed to us. When modern people get together to translate scripture, they want to focus on the most technically up-to-date research to inform their word choices. They also will focus on making the language accessible. That was not what motivated Lancelot Andrews and the other scholars who were set to work by King James. Yes, they wanted their translation to be informed and correct, but they chose languages and phrases that even in 1611 sounded archaic and ancient. And they did that because they knew such phrasing would convey something of the grandeur of God. And when we read scripture, we connect this grandeur with God's never-failing presence. And during times of trial and pain, can we think of a more assuring companion than an omnipotent God who loves each one of us? I invite everyone here to take some time today or this week looking at the 23rd Psalm and focus on the different phrases. Listen for God and God's Spirit. See how you're moved into the text. It's 57 words in the Hebrew, but boy, there is a lot going on here. We are drawn from places of peace and joy and comfort, and we're taken into darkness. And then we emerge into the fullness of God's love. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. The psalmist does not stay in the valley. The psalmist is able to move out, not denying what has happened, but knowing that he doesn't have to face it alone. If I were smart, I would have passed on preaching today. I would have asked the choir to come back up and sing the anthem again. And then I would have told you to read the text and to pray on it. But my call as a preacher is to lift up Scripture to you. And so my hope is that you hear these words and you're comforted and you're reassured by them, by the familiarity. But maybe you can also hear them in a different way. So for those here who insist that we hear the 23rd Psalm in the original text, the way God intended for it to be heard, it's not in the King's English. Mizmor LeDavid. Yehovah ro'i lo echzar. Bin'ot deshe yiritzeni. Balmi v'nuchot hinachaleni. Nafshi yeshovev. Yenacheni b'magle tzedek l'ma'an shemo, gam ki elech v'ge tzalmavet lo ira, ra ki ata imadi, shiftecha u'mishantecha hema yinachmuni. Ta'aroch l'fanai shulchan neged tzorai, deshanta v'ashemen roshi, kosi v'revayav. Ach tov v'chesed yirdafuni, kol yemei chayai v'shavti v'veit Yehovah l'orech yamin. I'm going to climb out on a limb here and offer the following proposition that almost none of you understood anything I just read. But you knew what I was reading. And God's presence and God's comfort and God's love were still there for you. Which brings me back to Winston Churchill. For another observation he made was that short words are best, and the old words, when short, are best of all. Short words are best. In the old words, when short, are best of all. Churchill was right. These old words are indeed the best of all.